My next guest is an award-winning journalist and editor-at-large at Inc. magazine. And she has a new book. It's called Startup Money Made Easy. And we're going to discuss her interviews with noted investors, noted successful business people like Mark Cuban and Damon John and others. Welcome to the show, Maria Aspen.
Steve, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Pleasure to have you. So, Maria, tell us a little bit about what the purpose was behind the book and what you're trying to cover.
Sure. So the very obscure title, Startup Money Made Easy, it's trying to be a fun and common sense and accessible guide to pretty much every question you might have when you're thinking about starting a business, then getting the business off the ground through the entire life of the business, up to expanding it, possibly selling it someday, or retiring and hopefully doing something fun with the money you make out of it.
It's a very complicated process to start a business and to create a successful business. There's so many challenges and obstacles in your way. So you've really got to kind of be very, very focused. As a matter of fact, I noticed that you had interviewed Damon John, who we've had on the show numerous times as well. And he talks about his time starting out. What kind of questions did you ask him and what did you learn from him?
Right. Well, as you know, Steve, he's just such a great resource to entrepreneurs and so willing to share so much of his experience. We've interviewed him several times at the magazine as well. And he told us that, you know, he told us a couple of stories, including that when he was just starting out, he got advice from neighbors and a guy who owned a little bodega in his neighborhood, sort of advising him, if you really want to do this, you're going to have to, you know, cut back on all of your personal spending, stop going out to dinner, trade in your car for a cheaper one, and just scrimp and save and put everything together to try to save up that $30,000 or $40,000 you need. Mm-hmm. He also got some help from his mother, who at a time when his early business couldn't get a bank loan, his mom took out a mortgage on their house to fund his business, mm-hmm. which, you know, is such an amazing help and reflects what a lot of help that entrepreneurs get and a lot of financing that small business owners get just starting out does come down to friends and family, which can be amazing, but also has its own share of challenges.
Well, you know, he had quite a number of failures before the last company, FUBU, For Us, By Us. He was making clothes for, you know, the culture in Queens, you know, where he was from, and the rap was just really starting to take off and the like. You know, but before that, he had a lot of failures and he had made an awful lot of mistakes. And one thing that I remember him saying to me is that he feels that his ability to be hungry, to stay hungry, was very important. He thinks a lot of businesses get too much money at the beginning. Did you encounter that with him at all?
Absolutely. I mean, that's something that we've heard from a lot of entrepreneurs we've interviewed over the year. It's funny you bring up mistakes. The book opens with a quote from Venus Williams, who, in addition to her, you know, superstar tennis career, has her own clothing company. And we did a cover, Inc. did a cover story on her a couple of years ago when she told us, ultimately, you know, you'll make mistakes. And the important thing is how you learn from them,
yeah.
Which is just something that we hear from so many different founders. Nobody has money figured out. The Federal Reserve found, I think.
Least of which.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but something like 64% of small businesses told the Federal Reserve in 2017 that they had experienced money problems. So mm-hmm. One of the theses of the book is that, you know, you never stop worrying about money, even once you've become as successful as Damon John. And that becoming as successful as Damon John, as you point out, requires a lot of grit and luck, yeah. And probably requires recovering from several failures along the way.
Right.
So if you think that you're alone in not knowing what to do about whatever money problem you're facing, you're really not. You're in very good company.
I think the idea too is that, you know, it's easy to say, you know, I should learn from my mistakes, but it's actually quite hard to do because first of all, admitting to yourself that you've made mistakes, that you're the one at fault is number one. So you're getting over an ego problem. Number two, it's really understanding the true nature of the mistake, which is not always that apparent. And then it's actually sitting down and going, you know, the next time I will know from this. So I think a lot of people kind of maybe take it personally and it discourages them and they're not really able to change. So it's this ability to adapt and to change, which was so important. You know, the other thing that really amazes me, if you interviewed Bobby Brown or you took interviews from Bobby Brown, now she turned a modest lipstick line into a profitable 30-store enterprise. It's amazing how these people, you know, start so small and they're able to figure out how to leverage their businesses to expand them exponentially.
Yes. And that's another just recurring theme of the book and something that we hear from so many different successful entrepreneurs. You know, you read all of these headlines these days about Uber and Lyft and Airbnb getting billions of dollars in venture capital, and it seems like overnight success. But so many more entrepreneurs sort of struggle and toil in obscurity for years or decades right. before breaking through, if they do. One of my favorite case studies in the book is MailChimp, and I've covered them. I've written features on them, and they made something like $600 million in revenue last year, but that's after 18 years. Yeah, and that was just two guys in Atlanta kind of struggling and scrimping through several years of building a business that they weren't sure was going to take off and not being sure how they were going to feed their families and relying on their spouses for rent and food. And, you know, they're very successful today, but that wasn't necessarily obvious even 10 years ago.
Well, it's like the iconic story of the entertainer, the overnight success. You know, well, they've been doing this, you know, for 15 years, but, you know, it's overnight because they've had a hit or something like that. You know, so the ability for these two people in Atlanta to stay the course, to believe in their idea and to keep changing with the markets, I mean, those are, you know, things that nobody really seems to talk about, but those are the day-to-day challenges of operating a business. You mentioned other people here too. Mark Cuban, who is an idol of mine. You know, I first was introduced to Mark Cuban. I listened to an interview when he was talking about the tech bubble in 1999, 2000, and how his business was worth so much. And he looked at it and he says, this is insane. This business is not worth this much, but the market was ascribing a crazy value to it. So he went to a brokerage firm and he was able to hedge his positions in his own personal stock. So when the market collapsed, his money didn't collapse along with it. And I thought, man, this guy does not have his ego. He wasn't caught up in the hypnosis of that era. This guy's got his 2 feet planted on the ground. What did you discuss or what articles did you look at in order to write about Mark Cuban?
Yeah, so I and my colleagues have interviewed Mark Cuban quite a bit over the years. You know, one of the pieces of advice that he's given us and other people is just don't use credit cards. Don't get into debt. Don't take on debt that you can't afford to pay off. And it's funny because that is not necessarily advice that everybody shares.
Yeah.
And we do talk to a lot of small business owners and entrepreneurs who do finance their businesses on credit cards. I mean, it's an interest-free 30-day loan. Mm-hmm. As long as you pay it off at the end of the month, it's easier to get credit on a credit card often than going through the hoops and all of the paperwork of applying for a bank loan or an SBA loan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked to Mark Cuban and Max Levchin, the co-founder of PayPal and Affirm, who also had a bad experience with credit cards. Jen Rubio of Away also, you know, there are all of these stories, especially of these entrepreneurs as younger people sort of not reading the fine print and getting in over their head on debt. And I think one big takeaway from this book, whether it's credit cards or online loans that cater to small businesses, or if you're lucky enough to get venture capital and have to be negotiating with outside investors, the overall advice is just please make sure to read the fine print, have advisors who you trust, and make sure that you're not signing something you don't understand.
Well, this idea of the credit card, you often hear these anecdotes about such and such business. You know, they started at the kitchen table and they borrow all their money on the credit cards. And that was the beginning of their success. But it's really almost like a roulette table bet, you know, red or black. You know, so if you hit, fine, you can pay that back. But man, if you don't hit, it's ruination because that stuff, those debts, that liability does not go away, you know?
No, it doesn't. But if you look at credit cards compared to some online loans, for example, some of the online loan products that have cropped up in the last couple of years, those can be even higher interest rates. So there are a lot of dangers out there.
Yeah. My guest is Maria Aspen. The book is Startup Money Made Easy. And she has interviewed all these wonderful entrepreneurs. So what advice was there for raising your first $10,000 in capital?
So a couple of things. First of all, you might not need to raise $10,000. One of the big pieces of good news from the book is that it's faster and cheaper and easier than ever to start a business these days, thanks to all of the different online and digital services that are out there. There's a study that about 10 years ago, it cost about $31,000 for the average small business startup. In 2018, we surveyed the heads of the Inc. 5000, the fastest growing private companies in America. And 42% of those CEOs told us that they used less than $5,000 to start their first business. So good news is you might not need as much money as you think you might need to start a business.
That's good news for the general economy, too, because the less friction there is for people's creative ideas to be turned into businesses, the better.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the other big piece of advice we have early on is you may not be able to support yourself by starting your business right off the bat. Of the Inc. 5000 CEOs we surveyed, only 28% of them started paying themselves a salary immediately upon starting their business.
Yeah, so how do you live? I often wondered, so how do you live if you can't pay yourself a salary?
What we hear from people is that you don't start it full time. You start it on the side, and here again is where technology can make it easier to do stuff at night, on weekends, on your lunch break. It certainly doesn't mean that you get much free time, but it's often easier to keep your day job, work on your business, and ramp it up until you get to a point where you can sustain life.
Right. Well, what are the best questions that an entrepreneur can ask before they actually launch their startup?
So there are several, and I'm so glad you asked because the first chapter of the book is generally about this. How much money do I need? Mm-hmm. What sort of business do I want to start? Is it a product-based business? Is it a service-based business? And that will help determine how much office space you need, how many other employees you need to hire. A service-based business is often cheaper to get off the ground because if you're an expert financial advisor or lawyer or consultant setting up shop for yourself, you already have the expertise and the contacts, and you might just need to set up your computer at a desk.
That's true.
If you're making cupcakes or t-shirts or a tech product, you'll probably need to hire engineers or t-shirt makers or cupcake makers and figure out a place to actually make the product. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, where you live also affects that very much.
What about research looking at the market and the market size and who the top players are? Is that important for a very small startup?
Absolutely. And we highly recommend writing a business plan that looks at those industry conditions and also just projects how much you expect to make and what you expect your numbers to be right off the bat. You know, business plans famously don't survive first contact with the enemy. They often are more theoretical than practical.
I know you're making five-year projections, you know, that you're going to grow at 15% a year. It's like, huh, really?
You know? Exactly.
I don't know what world that actually exists in, but it's not the real one, you know.
But it is important to spend the time to think through your numbers, however unreal they may be. And practically, if you are going to apply for a loan or if you're going to ask friends and family for money or ask more official investors for money, the bank, the accredited investor, or possibly even your family members might ask to see your business plan. So it's always good to have a piece of paper.
Sure. Yeah, I remember the old story about how Walt Disney, when he was building Disneyland, he had his artists actually draw out the full map and the conception of what it looked like, because he says he was flying to New York to talk to the bankers, and he would say they were wholly uncreative people, and they needed to actually see what the project was going to look like. So I think if you're looking at your business plan, you're thinking, well, you know, I've got to really paint this picture so those uncreative people that have all the bucks will kind of see my vision. I think that's kind of what you're saying.
Exactly. Just think of yourself as Walt Disney.
Okay, there you go. You know, one thing that I want to mention about the wonderful aspect of having a successful business is the multiple that you can earn based upon the value of the business, which is based upon the excess cash flow that a business is making. Let me explain that very quickly. So we're all employees and we get our paychecks and it's a set amount. You're making X number of dollars a year. But when you own a good business, you have that paycheck. But in addition to that, the business is generating excess capital. That's, let's say, just going into the bank, we'll say. And there's a return on that capital. So someone down the road can look at that excess money, say, well, I still got to pay a salary, but I have this excess money that the business is generating. That's worth something. Maybe I'll pay 10 times the value of that excess capital. And so I can get a 10% return. And then all of a sudden, sometime in the future, there's a big lump sum payout available to this person when they sell. This wealth creation is what I see as an advisor being the greatest contributor to wealth in the United States. And owning your own business is a way to kind of get out of the kind of the wage slave mentality.
Absolutely. Those are really good points. And I'm glad you bring that up. There were over 10,000 businesses sold last year, according to the business marketplace, BizBuySell. And it's increasing every year. So we're really seeing that wealth creation go up.
My guest, Maria Aspen, award-winning journalist and editor-at-large at Inc. magazine. Her new book is Startup Money Made Easy. Maria, thank you for taking the time and sharing that with us.
Steve, thank you so much.
So to hear this in any interview, again, if you have a question about what we've just discussed, go to our website, stevepomerantz.com, to join our conversation. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly update for upcoming live events and the important topics we've covered this week straight into your inbox. That's stevepomerantz.com. So to hear this in any interview, again, if you have a question about what we've just discussed, go to our website, stevepomerantz.com, to join our conversation.